morning, members. We are very thin, we are very few today. You are welcome, the two honorable members present, and the DG together with your team. And everybody in the house, you're welcome. We are going to have a bit of a long day today. We hope that we'll be able to be done by 1 o'clock. Because we've got 3 items. Two of them are going to take long, but the one I don't expect it to take that long. It's a briefing from the lawyers regarding the member bill. I've already had discussions with the Parliament legal advisors on this specific issue, and my understanding is that they would want to formally brief us as a committee so that we can then take a decision regarding this matter. So I don't expect it to take that long. We do have some apologies. The Honorable Makubela, the whip, is in Russia as part of a delegation from Parliament observing the elections in Moscow. I don't know what's happening with the other members. The only apology is from Honorable Perrin, who's going to join us later. And the rest of the other members, we don't know where they are. Missing in action. It's something that I think we must follow up. I think set up to, we must just find out from members if they are still willing to serve in the committee. Those who, at least we know they are members of the committee, because they have not been available for some time. And it affects the work of the committee then, because now and again it was supposed to have a quorum and people are not here. It becomes a problem. So those are the apologies, and I've also got an indication that the minister is going to join us a bit later. And then I've seen an apology from the deputy minister, who is overseas. Now we're going to have two main briefings. The one will be for the waste tire collection, and the other one will be from source regarding some of the issues that were brought to our attention. We ask that we should be briefed on those. We should receive a response. Now, I don't know whether the legal advisors are around. I see Nelly is here. Okay. Should I hand over to who's going to Nelly? The gentleman from Parliament apparently has not yet responded. I did speak to him regarding that brief that we received, so we thought that let's formalize it and receive a briefing on that. So I'm going to use that brief.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. Chair, our brief Berlin College, the department made a full briefing to the committee on the Mimar Hill. And during that briefing, the department introduced an amendment for the establishment of the Natural Resources Management District. Now that proposal, Chair, but we have not contained in the interpretation of the bill. Now, Chair, we got a brief instruction from the committee that the department, the parliamentary legal advisor, and the legal advisor should meet and discuss the issue and advise the committee on the way forward, because the proposed amendment seems to affect the rules of the National Assembly. Now, Chair, we have, in terms of the proposal of the department, is to establish this particular agency, Chair. But now the problem is that these amendments are substantial in nature. And as such, Rule 286 of the Rules of the National Assembly is applicable in this matter. Now, if you look at the Rule 286 of the Rules of the National Assembly, it states that the committee on inquiry on a bill, deliberation on a bill, if during the law deliberation there is a proposal that seeks to extend the subject of the bill, not change the subject matter, so extend the subject of the bill, change, then the portfolio committee should seek permission from the National Assembly, the House itself, in order to get permission to extend the subject matter of the bill. Now, Chair, if you look at these proposals from the department, they are substantial in nature and they extend the subject matter of the bill itself. Meaning, Chair, since the bill now has been introduced in Parliament, in order to avoid any chaotic approach and slip in a new amendment during this stage, the bottom line, Chair, is that if the Assembly or not if the committee accepts these new proposals, then the Assembly should seek permission from the National Assembly, Chair, in order to incorporate them in the bill. Now, Chair, moving forward, Chair, the problem now is that in terms of the normal processes of the rules, the portfolio committee is supposed to publish the exclusive version of the bill and hold the public hearings, receive oral and written submissions from the public on the content of the introduced version of the bill only, Chair. And now, during that process, the department is responding to the hearings and also making its own proposal based on these public submissions. Then the department could make this proposal to the portfolio committee at that stage. Now the problem now is that the public will not have been private, will not have been aware of this new agency that is about to be established. Meaning that the committee has received the permission from the House, then the committee will have to republish the bill so that the public would comment on this new agency that is thought to be established by the department. That would be the normal long process that would avoid any chaotic approach to the matter, Chair. Chair, it is obviously very important, Chair, in terms of Section 59 of the Constitution, Parliament has to engage the public, Chair. And the rules also give effect to that, Rule 286, sub-rule 6, that the committee has to publish the bill, especially if the subject matter of the bill has been extended. Therefore, that would be the legal position at the moment, Chair, in order to avoid any corrective approach to the matter, Chair. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, yeah, that was basically the summary of the opinion that both the Chief State Law Advisors and the Parliamentary Legal Services gave to us. And I'm afraid that I've been in contact with the department, with the Minister and the DG, to try and see what could be the way forward on this matter. And we had agreed, and the Minister has confirmed that in writing to us, and the Portfolio Committee will then proceed with the bill, excluding that proposed addition to the bill on the resources agency. Maybe let me just quickly read through the letter. I refer my letter, the letter is from the Minister to the Portfolio Committee through the Chair. I refer to my letter to the Portfolio Committee dated the 29th, and the workshop, the Portfolio Committee workshop for the National Environmental Management Loss Bill, NEMLA bill, that was held on the 30th and the 31st of January. I'm advised that the Portfolio Committee and the workshop supported in principle the proposed amendments regarding the establishment of the National Resource Management Agency as a specialized implementing agency to be responsible for implementing the national resource management programs. However, I'm further advised that the Portfolio Committee has reservations about the procedures set out in the rules of the National Assembly regarding the inclusion of the proposed text in the member bill. The Chief State Law Advisor has since advised that it is possible to include the provisions into the current bill, but that the committee will have to seek approval of the National Assembly, and also if the National Assembly approves the introduction of the new provision, the bill with the new provisions included will have to be published for public comment for the second time. In light of the above, I request that the committee to consider the current bill as introduced. Yours sincerely, Your Minister. So, I guess in line with that advice, we will then proceed then to schedule the public hearings on the bill, excluding the introduction of the National Resource Management Agency. Of course, from the presentation of Dr. Preston, I think it was very clear that it's something that would be very useful to have in managing the environmental problems in the department. But of course, because of these issues, I'm happy that the department also agreed that let's proceed with the bill, because it's quite urgent. There are some issues that are contained in the bill which the department would like to have them as of yesterday. So I don't know what colleagues think. My view is that let's proceed then to schedule the public hearings, and then let's proceed with it. Is there anything for agreed? Okay. So we will then do the necessary publication, because we have to publish our intention to conduct the public hearings, and then from there we will get inputs from members of the public, the stakeholders affected, and then we will then start to process the bill. I hope there is money this time to pay for, because Parliament's budget has been severely cut off to an extent that some of our programs were not able to pursue. So I hope there is enough money to start with the with the advert, and I think the advert was go out immediately. And then set out the time frames, and then I don't know how many weeks are we left with before we go on the constituency period. Okay. Well, it looks like we will then have a full program in the next term, because the Secretary says we must advertise for 3 full weeks, excluding the weekend, so it's almost a month. Okay, so we will schedule it like that, and then when we come back in the next term, we will then go full out on the public hearings and see if we can finalize the entire process before the end of the second term. At least by June we should have been done with this bill. Okay, we are done with this one. And I think we will bring it back. There is another one on marine special planning bill that we have approved. There's some few issues that the minister has asked that we must relook into. We have had discussion, and the bill has been revised. It's going to come back to the committee soon to just deal with those issues around decision making of the ministerial committee. I think that is a request that we must really look into that. So we will then finalize it. I think let's deal with it next weekend. Next week?
We're dealing with the system of the department.
Yeah, that's it. Just the 10 minutes there is not going to take long.
Okay.
So let's schedule it next week. Okay. Mungameli, you are... You can be excused, but otherwise you are welcome to listen to the rest of the presentation. Alright, thank you very much. Okay, there is also an apology from the DG. I forgot to raise it, DG, that you will request to be excused at late at 12 to attend the last time of the chair. Of the last time the court chair. I don't want to read the whole thing, but the apology is accepted. Okay, can we get then a presentation on this waste tire collection or recycling program, which we are very worried about this program. I'm extremely worried myself, because this is one of the recycling or what do you call it, a plan which on the face of it looks like it's collapsing, and it was the first one which was successful. Now we want to understand what the problem is. Why are we allowing this program to collapse? Because we still have got other plans which must be successful in the other waste streams. So that's the reason why we are staging this briefing today. So I don't know, DG, who's going to take us through. I see Mark is not here, the DDG of Waste. I don't know whether the colleagues that she works with are here. But just introduce who's here then to give us the graphic.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Supervisors. The acting DG out, Mark is at board, the minister was supposed to be attending the high level meeting yesterday and today, and because the minister couldn't travel, then they had to send him for the meeting. So we do have the FTDG behind me, which is Obed Baloyi, and then I have the team from the Waste Bureau. If you recall, Chairperson, at the last meeting, also we spoke about the fact that we had already advertised some of the positions and were in the process of having some capacity to assist the department in this area. So I would like to probably just introduce on my right is a senior manager, a executive manager for extended food services, with the Anglican Museum. And then I have on my far, on the right of family, Simang, who is the executive manager, business knowledge management, Verapi, Dr. Verapi Simang. And then
executive manager in the Waste Bureau.
Yes, within the Waste Bureau.
Okay.
And then Ms. Mamu Khala, Africa, she is the head of General Waste, EPR, which is the Tenet Responsibility. And I, as you know, that the Minister has not yet appointed the CEO of the entity, the Chief Operations Officer, the vacant as the CFO. And currently we have assistance from the specialist advisor, Mama Tita. She is here. And then the Waste branch team that you have met previously is also behind us. So that is the team that is here to respond to the hard questions that the chair is raised. So can I please request that Mama then start with the presentation, and then thereafter we have
both Mr. Anjan Mujeba and Mr. Dr. Simal will also join me in the presentation.
Okay.
Nomazi. So Nomazi, acting as the CEO.
She is the specialist advisor.
But I'm saying she's performing the duties of the CEO.
In a way, yes, but mostly legally, I'm the one that is operating the duty of the department. Because the entity is not yet fully established as a standing alone entity. Still within the department.
You are confusing the DG.
I have not appointed.
You are both the CEO and the DG.
Yes, I am in this case, unfortunately. That's why I said last time the real problem is that I have to wear a hat to the DG of the department, and then I must still be an accounting authority for the entity. That is a situation that is not ideal.
Okay. Just explain that before we continue.
Chairperson, there are entities that get established within the department. In the original memoir, However, in terms of listing treasury, opted that it should be a standalone entity in the board, which is why we then had the amendments that were introduced to Parliament. So at this point in time, it's not a listed independent entity. We had a similar arrangement in the past. The treasury's function was in the department, but it was a public listed in the department. I had an MOU with myself because I was an accounting authority for the Maluni Resources Fund and also the head of the Department of Environment and joined me at the time. So it does happen, but legally also it's impossible to isolate. The financial statements then treasurer will confirm whether those will be separate when we actually report for this current financial year or they will be interpreted in the department. So it is something that is able to happen in that context. But it's not a comfortable arrangement.
Okay, so do we have is there a legal advice regarding that arrangement?
Yes, it's in the legal, it's in our legislation currently. So if we read the Waste Act, do you have it around the setting of the entity? It says that if the CEO is not appointed, the DG of the Department of Environmental Affairs becomes the accounting authority. That is in the current legislation.
Okay.
That was passed by Parliament.
Okay. Well, I think we must find a way of legally clarifying the arrangements. I'm not sure whether your legal branch did advise you on this one, but we really like to get some legal clarity regarding, because we wouldn't want to find ourselves in a situation where there is a confusion of roles.
Yes.
Because somebody must perform a role and must then account to yourself as the accounting office. Now, when you perform the exact role, and whereas this is supposed to be a separate entity, it's going to introduce, according to my view, some problems.
I'll ask Isham and Zinda, because when the legislation was before Parliament, that's what we had proposed in 2014.
Okay, Isham.
How Parliament voted. So Isham and Zinda can respond to that.
Chair, it's section 34A. We'll do a comprehensive response for you. But
maybe let's do that response.
Okay.
Or you want to read that?
Well, I just want to refer to 34A3, which says, in the event of absence of a functional bureau or chief executive officer, the powers and duties of the bureau revert to the director general of the department contemplated in section 34G1, who in such a case must exercise those powers and perform those duties until the bureau is functional or a chief executive is appointed. So it's in the Act 34A sub 3.
Okay. So that Act supposes that there is no bureau as we speak, in which case the functions will vest with the Director General.
Yes.
Okay. But we are currently appointing, I understand that there is the capacity that has been introduced in the department. So it's almost like functional. Except that there is no board.
Mm.
Okay.
Not yet fully, because most of the appointments happen now in January and they're still continuing. So depending on when the legislation passes in Parliament, then the whole setup can be completed.
Mm.
At this point in time, it's the main meeting entity.
Okay. So we'll get that opinion regarding this arrangement, and then I'm sure you should be ready to give us that in 2 weeks or so. Okay, let's then hand over to what's the name?
Nonlife.
Take us through. We have got two issues that we must finalize before one. So, I don't know how much time we want. 30 minutes for the presentation, or 35 minutes, or 40 minutes.
Chair, we have two presentations. This one, which is an overarching presentation that deals with the operation and we deal with the waste and the structure as well. And then we have one more presentation that zooms into the technology, recycling technologies, as well as processing. So I'll try and get through this one in about 15 minutes. And so that we have time for the other presentation, if that's okay with you, Chair.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Chair, for the introduction. In this presentation, we thought we would just run through waste time management in general, look at the process flow and how we run the operations at the moment. Give honourable members an overview of how we structure the network. We've got one or two slides that look at our performance in terms of power collection and processing. There's one or two slides on processing capacity. And then we zoom into the waste bureau structure. The last part of the presentation deals with just our thoughts around the overtime, or our proposal around the overtime service by honourable members. If we then look at the process flow, so we have ties getting discarded all around the country. In the collection points that are registered with the Waste Bureau, we collect the tires. We have primary transporters that collect the tires. We've also got micro collectors who are largely based in the informal areas collecting, and the tires then go to our depots in the main. And then when they go to depots for temporary storage, from the depots we then get secondary transporters that come in the big link to take our tires to the processes that we have around the country. We have a few holding depots that are not very busy with the primary transporters, but we use them for temporary storage and take the lift trucks to get the tires out. We look then at the overview of the network. Honourable members, we have over 3,000 dealers around the country that we inherited from the Redisa network. And that's the dealers that we've been serviced by Redisa. There is a potential of another just over 2,000 dealers that need to be serviced as well. We're not able to do that at the moment because of capacity. And well, as capacity to collect as well as capacity for storage and processing. If we look at the micro collection part of our value chain, we have three provinces, Gauteng, Western Cape, and Northwest, that where we have micro collectors. In Gauteng, we have contracted 185 micro collectors that are spread across the province. And we have micro depots, which is very small depots that are largely in the townships. They operate largely from containers. The 17 of those in the Western Cape, we have 16 micro collectors and 4 micro depots. Each micro depot is managed by a micro depot operator who we pay about 6,000 a month. In Northwest, we have 5 micro We then look at transportation. We have two kinds of transporters. We have the primary transporters. We largely collect from the collection points to the depots. And then we have secondary transporters. These are the ones that have the super links. They largely collect from our depots to the various processors. But the slide shows the statistics of the numbers of the transporters that we have a grievance with. You can see from the slide that the highest number of our transporters are Gauteng, followed by KZN and then Western Cape. In this slide, we wanted to show the situation with the depots. We have depots all across the country. In the second column, we have the towns or the cities, the locations where our depots are, and we have the names of the depot operators in the third column. And in the fourth column, we have the names of the landlord companies for our depots. And we wanted to show in this slide that the depot landlords that are in red text are the ones that are less than 51% black owned. And when we took over the operations from Brigitte, we discovered that in the landlord or the landlords that we had, most of them were not black, and we wanted to change the BEE profile of the landlord. So we ran a tender, which we just concluded, where we looked for storage facilities where we were looking for black owned facilities. In the last column of this slide, we just indicated the name of the regional coordinators that we have across the country. In this slide, we are again showing the various depots that we have across the country with the respective capacities in terms of capacity for storage. It is clear on this slide that most of the depots are near full or full, and what has contributed to that is the fact that firstly we inherited full depots from Brigitte, and with the prohibition of export except with minister's approval, that situation has not gone better. Also, we have we do not have a lot of processing capacity. We are working on increasing the capacity at the moment. So part of the reason we did the land tender was to increase our storage capacity, because we wanted to manage the risks associated with the full depots. So on this slide, so we say that one of the things that government is interested in is the fact that we need to service the industry. So producers are paying the levy, the 230 per kilogram. They have continued to pay that irrespective of the liquidation and of producers. So government has no option but to service the industry and remove tires from the environment, and those largely from the dealers. So we have to operate the depots. That's why we've got depot operators. We're in contract with depot operators across the country. And we do carry the liability for all of the waste tires that are in our depots. This slide just gives an idea of the kind of demand we have for processing. So we have processors in KZN taking up the largest quantities of our tires. But as you can see from the slide, that the demand is not that great at the moment. Distribution of processors. So without zooming into the details, this slide that just shows that we haven't got processors all around the country. We have a few in Gauteng. We have about three in KZN, and so they are scattered, but there are provinces which just don't have processes at all. And then on this slide, we've looked at data on our collections for October, November, December last year. When we started operations, or we started running operations in October last year, and this slide shows the data for October to December. So, and this is tires collected per province. So you'll see in this slide that we're collecting most of the tires from Gauteng, followed by Western Cape and then KZN. And we collect very clear on this slide that most of what we're collecting is from the tire dealers. On the slide, we show delivery and processing of waste tires in the same 3 month period. And we show here that although we delivered quite a lot, about 11,000 tons of tires to processors, we still delivered quite a significant amount to other depots. In other words, we did depot to depot deliveries. And that was because with the full depots, in some cases, we had to move tires from one depot to another depot to create space in depots for primary collectors to bring in tires. And that is not ideal, but we had to do that just to manage storage areas. On the second graph, we show that most of what goes into processing is taken up by cement kilns, about 5,000 tons over the 3 month period went to cement kilns. And this, the cement kilns we're talking about here is TPC De Hoek, which is TPC is over here in the Western Cape. It is NPC in KZN, and we have Lafarge in Northeast. Then we also have crumbling operations taking up quite a bit of the tires, and then the rest goes to pyrolysis. We have a number of pyrolysis facilities, we've got two in Gauteng, then we've got a brickworks in PE, lots of bricks, and then we've got a small amount that gets taken up by secondary industries. That, so for example, we've got quite a number of facilities that make jungle gyms and other secondary products. This slide, this is where we try to compare, so on this slide, I'm going to try to speed up the issue. We're comparing here what we've done as the Waste Bureau versus what Gedisa did. Now, I have to mention that on this slide, we're comparing our statistics from October to December versus a 3 month period, which is January to March, off release. So if we look at the processing statistics, so release in total for that 3 month period, they processed about 10,000, just over 10,000 tons, right? And in that figure, we do not include export because we don't believe that export is part of processing. But in that same 3 month period, they collected about 10,000 tons. If you compare the 3 months that we've operated, October to December, we processed 11,911 tons, which is more than that, more than Redisa did. And if we then look at the various processing technologies, on this slide, Redisa, it shows you that Redisa puts through more tires through reuse. We put through more tires than them through crumbling operations. Pyrolysis is more or less the same. If we look at TDF, we've processed more tires through TDF, which is tire derived fuels, so that's the cement kilns largely, and Redisa did. And what is important to note on this slide was that Redisa put through quite a lot of tires through export, which is not a processing So we believe that, in terms of our analysis, at least the waste we avoid in this process exceeds those process priorities for the 3 months period that we have committed. Chair, on this slide, we wanted to give the Honourable Member a sense of what some of the changes that we have made in the Waste Bureau, their category of within the value chain. So if we look at processes, Releaser used to pay 31 cents a kilogram. And that included mentors. In fact, some of them were paid in advance, as we understand, to lay out capital infrastructure. So what we've done in respect of the mentors is that we have given them contracts where we are paying for the first 6 months, and that was just to help them adjust to the transition, and for the last 6 months we're not paying. The other processes like pyrolysis plants, crushing operations, we have continued to pay. In terms of the transporters, we took the rate that producer paid transporters, and within 3 months we did a general across the board 12% increase, and then we had cases where the 12% increase didn't make sense because of distances that transporters were traveling, and in those special cases the percentage increases were higher. In terms of depot operations, what we discovered was that with some of the fees that depot operators were getting paid, it was not fair. You had depots that were smaller, but were getting sort of the same amount in terms of service level agreements as depots that were bigger. So we tried to standardize that process such that an operator that's operating a bigger depot gets more budget. Secondly, we have stopped paying services for operators. Operators that are given the opportunity to go and negotiate their own contracts and possibly make savings for a number of services. For landlords, what we've done, as I mentioned earlier, we ran a tender where we wanted to improve the BEE profile. So we've got, right now, we've got more black-owned companies as our landlords at the Waste Bureau. In terms of micro depots used to be paid 3,000 a month with Aradisa. We've doubled that income to 6,000. Micro collectors used to be paid 4 rand a tyre. We've paid them 6 rand a tyre. They used to only be able to collect up to 750 tyres, which kept their income at 3,000. We've raised that cap to 1,000 tyres, increasing their income to 6,000. I won't dwell too much on processing because Andy and Vijay are going to deal quite a lot with the processing, except to say that because we realize the limitation in the processing capacity we run a tender where we were looking for pre-processing equipment. We're getting 17 balers, 12 steel beaters, just to take the steel out of the tires, and we've bought downsizing equipment for off-the-road tires, the big tires that we normally find in the mines, and so we've bought a set that will help us downsize those tires. It's going to require more capacity, and that capacity is coming through as we move along. Let me skip the slide and then we'll deal with this. Now, this slide shows the bureau structure. I think on this slide I'm just going to focus on the macro structure. So, as the DG indicated, we haven't got a board yet. It is provided for in the amendments that are currently in process. Again, as DG mentioned, there is no CEO. She's the accounting authority at the moment, if I just assist you with that. We've got three main branches. We have a chief operations officer, We have a CFO, and then we have a senior exec in terms, for EPR. And then at the next level, which is the executive managers, we have an executive manager for corporate services, executive manager for EPR, and executive manager for business development. And this next slide just gives us a breakdown of the structure associated with the chief operations officer. The two main branches there we have, so for corporate services, that's where we have our legal services, HR, governance and business performance management. And on the other side, with the executive manager, business development and knowledge management, we have so we have knowledge management, business development and research to R&D. So this is the EPR structure, where we have the senior exec for extended producer responsibility, assisted by two heads, EPR for general waste and EPR for hazardous waste. Hazardous waste is vacant at the moment, and we have Mamosa in the general waste, and basically most of the operations are being handled in that region. And then we have the support, this is the Chief Financial Officer division over here. We have at the moment a Head of Finance, he's in the employ, Head of Supply Chain is vacant, and supporting this Head of Finance, we have a Senior Manager already employed, Senior Manager Finance. We don't yet have an SCM head. And we just got one specialist for supply chain management and food. That brings me to the end of the presentation. Chair, should I continue with just the proposal on the business?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So in terms of the way that honorable members would like to visit KZN, so we just want to give a sense of what KZN looks like in terms of operations and the service providers that we've contracted there. So currently we are servicing about 300 dealers in KZN. We have 14 transporters in total. 12 are the primary transporters that largely collect from dealers to depots. And then we've got two secondary transporters that collect largely from depots to processors. We have four depots in KZN. Our biggest depot is in Cattleridge, and then we have another one in Hammersley. We have a small depot in Richards Bay and in a warehouse, and then we have a large depot in Ladysmith. In terms of processors, we've got three processors in KZN. We have Goswell Recycling, that's a crafting operation in Cattleridge. We have NPC, that's a cement company in Port Shepston. We have the Martin Group in Hammersdale. It's actually right next to our Hammersdale in Devon, and they do come back. Okay, so on this slide, we just indicated that in the schedule that we would propose, we would cover the four depots and the processors. And we think that transporters might be useful to meet with them at the various depots. We will organize PPE for honorable members. This slide just gives, we wanted to give honorable members contact details, so details of all of the participants that we have. So we've given the details of all of the transporters, all the processors and all the depots. And that brings us to the end. We will make available just our proposal in terms of how we think the itinerary should look like, and then honorable members can direct us if the changes that they specifically want to make. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
So the next application.
Next part.
Good morning, honorable members, and thank you for the opportunity to share with you our thinking on the processing technologies. So, I'm going to take you through a number of slides that talk to various aspects of processing technologies. Saying that because it gives background to challenges of processor in order to take the tire apart and then put together a product that can be used in the market. And this is the recycling industry, which has got mainly three categories. You know, we've got technologies that do shredding, we've got technologies that do crumbling, and technologies that do pyrolysis. And what you take away from this profile is that all these technologies use a lot of energy and require very expensive machinery to actually take the tire apart. And actually, they might be downgrading. They are recycling. Another term for that is downcycling. This is the issue of the market that you have to take away from this slide. Because the market is very tricky for recycling processors. You really have to understand the market and start from the market to which you want to supply the solution, and then go back to the technology that you have to deploy in order to satisfy the needs and values of that market. So, and that is, you have to look up at the slide to see the size of the market. And actually your understanding of the market will then take you back to what technologies, what methods do you have to apply to really satisfy the needs of that market. It does not start from producing a recycled product and then looking for the market. That is a very tricky approach, and it's not going to make you sustainable, because, you know, wealth comes from the market. The market has to be prepared to pay a certain value for the product that you provide. Remember, these technologies also produce products that compete with products from natural rubber. So you get rubber products from, let's say, the trees in Southeast Asia, and those products might be cheaper than your own product as a processor. So that's a very significant challenge for processors, the ones that I've listed, that they would have to overcome to remain sustainable. You know, I'm spending this time because, you know, the market dynamics is a phenomenon you have to understand if you're going to process waste tires because of those forces in the market. The other slides are just going to give you a general picture of the structure of these processes. When you go to the processing plant, this is the structure that you will find. This is for a crumbling plant. If you're going to a crumbling plant, you know, it's divided into various sections. A crumbling plant will take a tire and then shred it and then grind it, and then it'll, you know, ship the product to the client. And what you appreciate from this is that, you know, these are very expensive processes and that take a lot of energy. And the kind of product that they produce also determine the market that they're going to supply. So these are various morphologies or the forms of the crumb that they produce, and they actually predetermine the market that you will supply to. So hence I emphasize that you actually need to start from the market and then know what technologies you have to put in place into your process. You know, crumbs are used in various applications. One is the rubberized asphalt, and this is the process for producing rubberized asphalt. It's really useful for asphalt because, you know, it produces a long-lasting and safe asphalt and really quiet roads. Because, you know, rubber on rubber, there's no skidding there. So it's useful for that. But then the challenge is that the market is not always there. You know, there are times when there's a booming construction of roads, and then the rest of the time, you know, you have to get a sense of where the market is. So you really need to understand the market from that end. The next category of processors are the pyrolysis plants. you can see here we start with the tire and end up with actually the components of the tire. So those components are, you know, it could be your oil, it could be your carbon black, it's also your steel as well. This, you would appreciate, is a very energy intensive process because you need very high temperatures to really disaggregate the tire into these components. And I made an example of aluminum cans because in aluminum cans, which also take a lot of energy to produce, the recycling industry does not pyrolyze the aluminum can into its various components. Hence it has bypassed the issue of energy intensity and therefore the cost structure as well. In general, pyrolysis technologies are challenged, I mean, in terms of the little commercial experience worldwide. Really most plants are demonstration scale. There are different types of pyrolysis plants, so they produce different products at different grades of quality. This is a challenge in terms of the market, because you know a market has got requirements. They want a certain quantity of product, they want it at a certain level of quality, and they want it at a price that they will specify. So it's a challenge for sustainability of this industry. And really what pyrolysis tries to do is to reverse the tire manufacturing process. You saw the slide where it showed how tires are manufactured. But it's also using thermal energy to do so. And therefore, it's very high capital and energy intensive, and the margins for them are very low because it competes in the oil market. You know what price you pay for oil when you go to fill up at the gas station. So they really have to use that price. But the quality as well is a challenge for them. So they need a lot of help. The next category of processes are the recovery solutions, mainly in the form of cement kiln. The picture you see there is that of a cement kiln. So when you go to the plant, you'll see this very long, thick pipe, maybe 60 meters long, that operates at a very high temperature for cement manufacturing. And on one end of that pipe comes in the coal, and then on the other end is the flame. And that process is very tricky because you have to get the mixture right of the energy has to combine with the coal to actually have a proper mixing in that tank. And high temperatures as well, because there are emissions problems if you don't get the mixing right. So in general, cement kilns, their production costs are very highly impacted by their thermal energy costs. They constitute up to 50% of their production costs, and therefore it's useful for them to introduce tires, which you give them for free. At the moment, I think they've been getting some subsidy, but that should last because tires are very good for their processes. And the more tires they take, the more their production cost will go down, the more savings they incur. In general, I've given that overview of the technological and market challenges of the processes. And the takeaways are that they are very capital and energy intensive processes, and they are very specific market requirements. So you have to do your research on the market upfront. You don't start by a process and produce products and then look for a market. The market does not work like that. It works on supply and demand that is there. If you've got supply, then you have a challenge because price becomes an issue. Those forces will, minimize the price that you can charge for your product.
Doc, you must remember we're not in a workshop.
Yes.
We want to get some answers as to why the operation is is the what is the state of affairs with regard to the collection. So I think we appreciate the other information, but let's just zoom into the actual issues because we don't have time.
Okay. I think this is the last slide, really, Chair. So offtake agreements with the market are very important, and important upfront. And you know, you have also challenged with competition from products from virgin rubber, because the price you can charge the market has to be comparable or beat, you know, the product from virgin rubber. That's really the last slide I shared, and thank you very much for the opportunity. I think Andy will then go into, you know, the operations and how they've been going.
Okay. I hope you are not going to take another 15 minutes.
No, Chair. I only have a few slides.
Okay.
So, Chair, I'm just going to cover the entire processing part from an operation point of view. That first slide really talks about actually providing the comparison between the waste bureau and the approach of the use and the research started. When we started the operations in October, in order to get the operations up and running in the shortest possible time, the way we were contracted with the processors that were contracted with the leader. And as a result of that, the credit enabled us to restart the operations and ensure continuity. In terms of focus, both register and the waste bureau focus on similar technologies that were highlighted by Dr. Cinema in the presentation, which are tire derived fuel. Basically, tire derived fuel is used by cement kilns. And also, there's a plant in Portland, which is a brickwork that also uses tires as fuel. In the cement kilns, the tires are used to replace coal as an energy source. So we focus on TDF, we focus on grinding operations, we focus on pyrolysis as well as in the reuse industry. As was mentioned earlier on, in addition to processing of tires locally, Fredisa also exported a lot of tires for processing overseas. And that was actually counted as part of processing, even though some of those tires were understood or exported for the SMBE without any kind of pre-processing. But exporting of tire products has since been disallowed by the minister unless there's a special permit that has been approved by the minister. And also it was noting that not all the processors that were contracted with Redisa contracted with the waste bureau, even though we did approach them. Some of course were doing quite a lot of exporting, and when that was discouraged, they stopped being involved in these activities. We also have one, for instance, that a fire that has not been able to recover. So for various reasons, even though we approached them, some of them have not contracted with us. This slide, it was shown by Tatiana, but it just emphasizes the point that I was making basically in terms of the comparison between the bureau and Redisa. Basically, in terms of the tire processing, Redisa for that 3 month period processed locally about 10,000 tons of tires compared to the bureau, which was just under 2,000 tons, and then in addition, Redisa exported just under 10,000 tire products. And then these are just the companies that we contracted with and categorized in terms of processing type. We've got about 5, for instance, under TDF, we've got about 3 under clamping, and 4 under pyrolysis, and then we also supply to the reuse industry. There's quite a number of them, so I could list them. They are generally very long and take them as small quantities. And then in terms of different capacity utilization, in terms of processing, about 70% of tire processing is done by the tire derived fuel industry, 32% by carbon operation, 30% by pyrolysis, and then 8% by reuse. And then this slide really shows this more or less the similar information approaches about the slide didn't come out nicely. But it's the same as the previous slide that I've shown, but categorized in terms according to the weight hierarchy. So it's about 47% in terms of recovery, 45% in terms of recycling. That is really pyrolysis and carbon operation mainly, and then 8% in terms of reuse. In terms of the challenges that we have as far as processing is concerned, the main one is that is lack of processing capacity due to the fluid depots as a result. First one, when we took over, the depots were already full, and it's been a continuous struggle basically to create this. And the fact that we are no longer exporting tires also means then that it has to be problem. And then, although China put up that we understand the reason for the declaration of exports, I'm not a liberal advocating for it. So as a result of lack of processing, it creates bottlenecks. It results in full depots, and as a result of the full depots, it means therefore that it becomes difficult to collect tires because there's no depot space to collect tires. And also another challenge is the fact that processing capacity is currently concentrated in certain provinces. As a result of that, it means then therefore that we have to incur high transportation costs to transport the tires from provinces that do not have processing capacity to provinces that do have. And also plant availability. As the processor is also a challenge, downtime, sometimes the same downtime, basically it means we cannot deliver tires to processing. And that also creates bottlenecks, basically. And also, for instance, in cement kiln, when they start after the plants, they prefer to use coal as fuel until the kiln stabilizes, and only after that do they start consuming tires. And then all the time they come in, there is a build-up of stock from our side. This slide, you've already seen the other panels again. I mean, it shows the location of the processing plants. As you can see, it's concentrated mainly in Gauteng as well as Natal. And we also have two processors here in the Western Cape. Ideally, we want to have processing capacity as close as possible to the collection points at the source of the tire, with tires, so to speak. And then in terms of the actions to improve processing capacity, basically some of the current processors are encouraged to increase tire consumption. A few of them are busy with capital expenditure investment projects to be able to expand their operations in the process will be consuming more tire. And also some of the companies that are participating but have, for instance, plants or kilns, for instance, that are not participating, they are looking at expanding that service to the other plants that they do own. The Westbino is also planning to go out on tender with these currently with tens of restaurants for more processing capacity. And once we have that increased processing capacity, it will also help us to improve basically the whole tire processing operation, especially in terms of the whole space availability for collection. The priorities as far as the tender will include what I was saying just now in terms of distributing the processing capacity around the country instead of being concentrated in certain areas. So And also, we're going to be focusing on priorities and prioritizing moving up the waste hierarchy, especially in terms of reuse and recycling. That is the end of the relationship. Thank you very much, Member.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, honorable members. I think just to indicate where as a branch we come in with regards to the way we are done. First of all, I mean, we are responsible for the policy and the regulation side. So last year we did amend the waste regulations. You remember that there is a plan that the colleagues were talking about was developed under the waste tire regulation. So in the amendment, we have taken that responsibility for developing integrated industry waste tires out completely from that regulation. The second thing that we have looked at is, I think in the presentation you saw that when Redita was managing the tires, there are some portion of tires that were exported from the country, and the plan did not allow for that. So what we have now done is, I think as it has indicated, we have put a prohibition for the exporting of tires from South Africa unless authorized by the minister. So nobody is allowed to do that unless the minister allows that to happen. Now, with regards to what we're doing going forward with the waste tire plan, the minister published a section 28 call for the tire plans to be submitted. We are currently with the department together with the Waste Bureau looking into the evaluation of the plans that we have received. The plans were basically due to be submitted in December, and we have received current four plans that we are looking at. And we should be able to come back. I think this was presented before to the committee. So we should be able to come back when we have done the evaluation to be able to report with regards to the new plans, what will happen going forward. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. All members were taking notes. I think what is missing from the presentation is the financials. Because we have not been briefed on what are the financial arrangements, the situation. We know that as soon as this responsibility was said to revert back to the department, there was an allocation by Treasury of 200 million, which was supposed to cater for the establishment of the bureau as well as its operation. Now, I would have liked to get a sense of what are the whether is that sufficient to carry the operation, it's not sufficient, and so forth, and so forth. Now, we know that, for instance, Redisa was collecting almost up to 600 million from industry. And the treasury has now allocated 200. I don't know whether it's sufficient to for the network that exists for the processors, the pickers, and everybody else, the depots. So I think that is something that is missing from the presentation. Now, if whilst I see members are still trying to look at their notes, you are welcome, Honorable Pele. We did get your apology earlier on. What the starting method and procedure that was used when employees were recruited? What did we use? Did we use the departmental procedures in terms of recruitment, or because the board, as we know, does not exist for now. So it means that responsibility of appointing, which was supposed to be by the board, not done by the department. So what procedures were used there, and the remuneration, is it at the level of civil servants, or what level is it, and who determines that level? Now that is in relation to the establishment. I still have got questions around the operation, but I think members must start first if they do have questions. I know we are not many now. So is there anything, Honorable Stenker?
Thank you.
What I say, Johnny, or which one? Johnny.
I think because we know a lot of members, the prison members are allowed to ask more questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Good, thank you. Okay. So I'm going to start on the second, on the last presentation, and then work it back, because it's fresh in my memory. And I'm going to start with the stuff I wrote down now. Pre-prepared questions are too long. But on the last one, it says that the Waste Bureau versus the T-shirt release approach is to ensure the continuity. So the Waste Bureau contracted with the TSA blah, blah. In all honesty, I mean this with a lot of respect, it sounds like the Waste Bureau is trying to do exactly what the TSA tried to do, just continue. It doesn't seem like the Waste Bureau is trying to do anything different. And then plant availability is also a challenge, currently concentrated in certain provinces, etc. Bottlenecks mentioned that. I want to know, what did Regisa do to avoid this? Because I didn't think there was a problem with it. Okay, so then, on the market. It's just interesting to hear you saying we should work from the market upwards and downwards or whatever. And yet, we are creating at the moment, we are creating tire landfills. So I would like to know that that means that there's a lack of demand from the market. And what is the Waste Bureau's plan to fix it? Because currently, you have so much erosion, you have so much swinging the bowl, there's too much. What are we doing? Right. So, the pre... So you put on the plane. Okay, I would like to know, why is the Bureau asking for more funding, continuing to manage the industry? Is there any intention by the Waste Bureau to continue to manage the operations of the waste tire industry? And if so, has proposals been submitted to the minister? I find it difficult that I just think it can't be possible for the Waste Bureau to fulfill its oversight role effectively if it continues being involved in operations. Because my understanding of the Waste Bureau was that it's going to be completely different to reduce that. And as I say, now it's not exactly the same. Okay, secondly, the acting DG mentioned about the appointments, etc., and the plans and so on. I just want to know what is the anticipated timing by the Waste Bureau of the appointment of these industry managers? It's important that solutions and contracts, because you'll just know, okay, that the Waste Bureau or any other major enters into result in long-term sustainability. Okay. So I want to know, how is it sustainable, or how sustainable are the changes to the network participants' remuneration into the future? Because these uncollected tires, since 2012, when they got 2.30 per kilogram, so still there. So how's that going to affect affected. And then also, very importantly, probably one of my most important questions that I want to answer, is that what's the work they're doing about the off-the-road, the OCR backlog, and the current collect. So both of them, I mean, there's a massive backlog, and then there's still more and more coming. Okay. When it comes to properties, okay. Effectively, this is the second term for this type of operation, right? Where you fill in the first one. When you went on to the processing and what was done in the first presentation, it just feels like we are creating a norm for every successor, whichever comes after, and just start over. Start from scratch. Well, why I'm saying that is doing away with the existing property network and setting up a new one, it must be hugely, massively expensive. And I get the whole BE thing, and I think it's great. But I'm just concerned that we're just doing away with the current one. Shouldn't we rather just be incorporating everyone? Because as I said in the beginning, it feels like the Waste Bureau is just trying to redo what Rikisa did, except we need everything, we need to pay for everything from scratch. Okay, and then there's one concern that I have, because if the Waste Bureau grows, let's say, 2-3 years later, the Waste Bureau needs to be the leader. It needs to lead by example, correct? Now, Classwork, which is 80% the capacity, is a depot that you're using is non-compliant. Doesn't have any of the regulations that you have for depots. It doesn't have that. And that's one that I know of. I've got photos if you want them. Okay, another one. The capacity problem at the depots are due to, the lack of demand, sorry. Okay, another one. From the 12th of October last year, we had a briefing, and DR gave an assurance on maintaining and even exceeding the status of 70% of tyres produced in the tyre program of recycling, right? You gave that short, 3 months one. But if I'm not mistaken, you gave it for last year, was right. The rate, as in which was achieved by the Rikisa and what was achieved by the Waste Bureau. I want to know what you've done since 2018. It's a new year, it's a new start. I want to know the rate achieved in 2018 under the management of the Bureau, the right recycling rate. Also, what's currently being done with regard to the OTR fire collection backlog? Okay, already lost that time. Okay. It's been around a year since the Waste Bureau has been established. I want to know how far you are with filling those key corporate positions that you mentioned the vacancy. I don't know how far you are, and I would like a timeline if you can get one. Also, I'd like to know when the Waste Bureau will have a board. Again, I'd like a timeline. Has the mandate changed when it comes to, DR informed us last year that its mandate during the transitional phase is between 3 months and a year. Okay. Yet, there's advertising, there's been jobs that's been advertising tenders for 5-year duration. Okay, so maybe I'm wrong, but I just want to understand, has the mandate changed?
You had a lot. Remember, the board one is for us, we're busy doing that in the Nebula. The question about the bot.
Wow.
So, just on the record, yeah, it's fine. But we are the ones who are supposed to finalize that. Make sure that it's legal. There's legislation making provision for that. Honorable President, we didn't get much. You arrived a bit late. Keep on forgetting your name, honorable member. But I don't know whether you've got some question. Honorable Alice.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks for giving me this opportunity. My apologies for coming in. I've got some few questions, three from the first presentation and three from the second presentation. I just want to check over how many dealers are currently being serviced, which are inherited from Redisa Academy. And the second question, which three provinces are not registered and have no active depot, and why is that so? And the third question, why are there only 11 depot operations and mostly are white? And from the second presentation, I just want to check what type of raw material, tire raw material are used in the manufacturing of tires. And what type of paralysis technologies are there? And how much will it cost to build these machinery used for recycling? And what percentage is the degrading is done by them? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, those are the questions. I'm just going to add on them. And then we will break. So you will sort yourself out, and then when you come back, we'll break for about 3 minutes and then come back. During December last year, October, November, December, I was inundated with a lot of queries from some of the people involved in the network, either the waste, the tire pickers or the depot people, all sorts of complaints about the fact that they are not getting paid. And from my reading of the letters that were coming to my office, the impression I got is that the system is collapsing. It's an environmental disaster about to happen, because the allegations that the depots are full beyond capacity, nothing has been collected and all of that. Now today is a different picture being painted about this problem. So I just want to get some reassurance whether where we are now, is everything in order? Are we not experiencing problems with regard to the collapse of the system, as the picture was beginning to emerge that this thing is going to collapse? Now, do we have a sense of the level of, or the percentage of the tires that get collected, that get into the system of this recycling, vis-a-vis those that get produced? The last time I think the briefing was about we collect about 70%. Is that still the same or is it less? Are we not having lots of tires in the what is it, waste what do you call this, waste dumps? What is it called?
Landfill
sites. Landfill sites. are we not having tires that end up going to the landfill site? Because the intention was to divert from the landfill site through this program of recycling. I think on the issue of the finances, I don't know, maybe we might have to have a follow-up when we discuss the quarterly report. We might have to discuss the finances, because it's an area that I want to be certain whether things are going properly, whether the system of receiving the invoices from those people and paying them, what system do we have, and how do we manage this process, obtaining the invoices, processing them, ultimately getting paid. And who does the payment? Is it the department or is it the bureau? So all the financial arrangements, I think we need to have a discussion around those things. So yeah, basically those are the questions. I think some of my questions, Honorable Stinkham did reflect on them. So we are going to give you some time to discuss the question, and then when we come back, we will you will then give us the responses. It's about 7 minutes to 11. If my phone is on time. So we'll be back at, say, 11. 7 minutes break.
No, this is the Remember that we have a They are helping us with payments for the CWP.
and treasurer gave us the approval to use the processes to pay. So yes, you may have had problems initially. I think when we were here in October, we did say that we anticipate that we have teething problems because one, the system of release was not available for us to use. We had to work out an arrangement for the department because of the pending legal process or court process to produce. So we are not able to use once they use the whole feeder system there and all of that because it's part of the infrastructure that is under the provisional regulator. So I must say that I think from what we have received as the court that most of the people are paid now on time. But if there are specific cases, you may have to proceed and look at it. And the second part of your question, Chair, has been around the allocation. The 200 million by Treasury was informed by the fact that we had a plan when the university was paid to register for 4.5 years of the FSC was supposed to be 5 years. That investment was supposed to provide the layout for the university. And therefore, it was assumed that at the time, with the infrastructure that existed, then the 200 million was then linked to the probably the necessary investment until we have a different legal case. Because at the time, Redita, as you recall, did not submit a business plan to Treasure because we were going to use that to make the transfer. So that is the starting point. So as to how much in future we will then be able to access from the money that are collected by staff is going to depend on one, the business case that we put and presented to Treasury, and even the waste plan that we receive. But it does not go that what is collected by staff comes over. Unfortunately, the reason is what we have been told a number of times that it's not something that, but Treasury can explain that to the honorable members if they are invited to the committee. But currently, we're working on the basis of that allocation that we currently have, and that's our report will then be against. So we are paying the micro collector as well as the other processors, transporters and processors through that fund and we then provide you the essential support. The second part of your question, Honorable Chair, on recruitment of staff, we also follow the department process. However, in terms of pay scale, they are not employees of the department, they are contracted staff. Once the bureau is fully established, we transfer the staff to the community. And we have a working experience with that. Honorable CEO of Weather Services, when they establish the Weather Services, when we see the department and government services, they also case how we dealt with them. They were firstly in the department and then they were transferred to. That's why they are not in the permanent establishment of the department. So we follow that, and the pay scales are determined on the basis of the pay scale study that was undertaken by an independent service provider for us as part of the business case for the lease bureau and then approved by the minister. So that's what is applicable to the lease bureau. That also I can make available check to yourself and on the honor of the minister. And then on the last comment, then I will hand over to the colleague. So we have the pay scales and remuneration levels that go with the structure and the business case that I can make available. And then honorable member here comes.
So recruitment was done by the department?
Yes, undertaken. We advertised in the newspaper, the national newspaper, and then we ran the process of appointment, the selection process, through the department system, because we did not have people that could run that within the table. So it's, and even now the CFO of the department is responsible for the accounting. For until we have received the ministry. And then secondly, in answering the honourable member, Stan Trump, the executive position, there are executive positions that go to cabinet. The COO, the CFO, as well as the CEO. So the minister is in the process of, she will then take those to cabinet for approval for those 11 for the appointment. So it is the same system that applies to the other entities. And that those constitutions then be followed. When we were in the committee in October, the minister was explaining the need to have a smooth transition. So partly it meant that you can't not have considered the people that are already part of the legal plan. So all the people that are participants have to be given an opportunity to then participate and then manage performance but on the basis of intent, because in government we do not have the system of just taking over those people as they are. We have to get approval from Treasury. So I made a submission to Treasury, and they then gave us a pass. The advice that they gave us was, we can contract for a minimum of 0 to 1 year, at most maximum 1 year with existing either transporters or microprocessors, 6 months or a year, but not exceed that. We must open the process. So it was just to allow for the transition. So the approval that I have for that deviation, so that we don't just take them over, but we re-look at the conditions of the contract that is there under the visa, and then give that continuity, and then run an open process of transporters, microprocessors, vehicles, etc., etc. In that process, in the analysis of what then was in the network, the visa had targets. There were transformation targets that they did not meet, and SME targets, and also even recycling waste targets. So those targets that were not met, we then had to, in the process of opening up, then begin to try and correct and bring in the participation, SMEs, and also small micro collectors to be officially appointed. And the report also, and I think the branch will just confirm some of the deviations of it. They reported that they had about 3,000 micro collectors at the time. When we had to contract, we only managed to get the number that the Bureau of Police represented, 100 and something, more, not 3,000. So that we contracted with those that were there, and they had the card of the visa. And we don't have other people that say yes, of course, when we're appointed and we're working for the visa. So those are some of the differences that we keep up in the process. So the operations under the Bureau are then to, one, enable the transition and continuity, while to then implement measures to correct what was not legally compliant, both administratively and also from an environmental outcomes point of view. So we are then having to contract 3 years or 5 years. Those contracts will be fitted to the people automatically once it is fully established. And the new plan, whichever is going to have to be considered by the minister as a plan, they would have to take into account what is existing. Because unfortunately, we cannot assume that we are taking over or we are going to run a waste stream that is non-existent. There was already operation, and therefore the new player would have to take into account all of those in that respect. And secondly, the infrastructure investment. The question that we are also trying to answer is whether, if we have again another waste plan, and somebody or that organization that that this is given approval to manage the waste there. Linda will talk to the legal provisions currently in the Waste Act, which say that even when there is a problem with whoever in any of the other wastes, the Bureau is empowered through that legal provision, which she can explain, to intervene for the benefit of the public, for the public good benefit. So the question then that then remains is, the equipment must it then remain being a private party equipment or not investment on infrastructure, or is it public good infrastructure? Those are the questions that we need to answer, both in our engagement with Treasury and taking the process forward, because those are the conditions we have to tighten. Remember, when we were reporting, we were saying part of our problem was in the register agreement, we had a lot of loopholes in the past. And currently we have an opportunity to make sure that we don't have a repeat. We have to take the lessons that we learned from there and then improve the administration for the future and make sure that taxpayers or even levy payers are then not seeing that we are wasting money that that are funding the investment for the recycling activity. So that is what I thought I could respond to in terms of the questions that are raised.
Okay. You know, I don't know whether must I raise this because it's not related to Boyish Fire. Something that I just picked up, and now that you are talking about deviation,
mm-hmm.
you remind me of it.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you are in a position to comment on it now. I saw something that was returned back from Treasury, the request for deviation for 12 million or something. Are you able to clarify or do you want us to?
Well, Chair can clarify and then
okay.
we can provide you with the supporting information. Recall, Chairperson, that in our quarterly target, even last year, we have what is called coordinated integrated permitting system. As part of the one environmental system, we said that we need to automate our EIA or environmental authorization process as a sector. And provinces agreed to me more than 5 years ago that we will then have a national system and not each province having its own system. And that system will then be rolled out. And CETA then help us to then implement or at least design the system. Now we have reached the point where we have extensions, numerous extensions with CETA. And the modules are not functional. The teams have tried to test the modules since last year, July, and the system is not operational. Now we're then asking for a division to then get another service provider. Not CETA to then deliver the integrated services to the department. Treasury then convened a meeting between us and CETA, and in that meeting we discussed how we should proceed. And then CETA has requested a 2-month extension, hence the Treasury then rejected or did not approve that we go ahead. After 2 months, we have to then see whether
can't you procure it through the normal procurement?
Yes, the deviation from the CETA legislation compels us to use them. So
it's to deviate from the CETA
so
process,
that we can get
yes.
and
not to deviate from the procurement
no,
process.
Yeah, no, we use the normal procurement process.
Oh, okay.
So that is the fact. So I just want first Linda to talk to that provision and then the colleagues from WAIT around the questions on diversion from that to the actual
thank you, Chair and Honourable Speaker. We have inserted the provision in the WAIT Power Regulations 2070 and its regulation 12. And it makes provision for the event where a waste fire management plan expires or is withdrawn or is terminated. under those circumstances, the Waste Management Bureau can step in and take over the function, and then all the participants that were registered with the Wastewater Management Plan upon the expiry, withdrawal or determination shall in the interim then be regarded as being registered with the Waste Management Bureau. And that is the interim arrangement under a new plan is in place.
On the diversion, the formulation is based on the tonnages that were put onto the market through manufacturing and importation, and budget to get a percentage based on the wear and tear of those tires. So I'll demonstrate November 2016. The total was around 224 new tires, and then weight arising take down the percentage wear and tear, and from that we look at how the tires were processed. So the deviation that has been reflected as part of the performance review of producer, they did not first disclose the export because it was not allowed. So there was a period wherein there was an over reporting on diversion, where they sort of equated exports to recycling and they did not fully disclose. So that sort of distorted the recycling rates that we presented previously.
What question were you answering?
Well,
it's the same question that I also asked.
And
what volumes are being produced? How many are we recycling?
The first aspect, yes, but I refer to the year that ended November 2016. So I think with the new figures we can be able to get for 2017. But I think we just need to do that because that calculation was not done.
So you calculate them at the end of the year, financial year, or how do you calculate?
Okay, back then we were using the plan year as in the approval of the register plan from November, because it was approved from November, so it was not necessarily a financial year as we used in the department, but it was 12 months based on the approval.
Okay. I hope you still answer the question that you raised about the tires that gets produced, because it determines whether there are excess tires finding their way to the landfill sites and to everywhere else on the streets and all these other places. So that is the question which is fundamental to the success of the program itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the extent to which you succeed as a program depends on whether the tires that get produced and those that get diverted into the program, collected and recycled finally or taking them through the program. I hope somebody will still respond to that question.
Thank you. In terms of the numbers, I mean, that were just mentioned just now for the data, the equivalent recycling rate for 2015 was 63%, and then for November 2015, November 2016 was 65%. And also, we do have the collection rate for the data beginning from December 2015 to May 2017, which is 6 months, which was about 42,000 tons. Which makes about 84,000 tons per annum, if you analyze it. And then the rate for that becomes about 49%. 2017, so first 6 months of 2017. So even in the data, you can see that the trend was coming down from 6% to 55% to around 49%. And then when you look at the waste bureau from October 2017 to December 2017, we collected 12,000 tons of tire. And if you analyze that, it's about 16,000. And then the recycling, the equivalent recycling rate for that is about 55%. And bear in mind that the waste bureau was not exporting any tires, whereas if you look at the register recycling rate, it also included exports as well.
So from 60-something in 2015, we are now going to 35%. So we should...
Sure, I think
okay.
We must also consider that, the waste bureau started operation, in New York, and this year also in June, October. So, I would have expected the waste bureau to start, on a full scale, at full capacity. So, in subsequent months, the expedition, also, we do have, for instance, all processes coming to contract with us. Mm. And as a result of that, the more processes we have, the more demand we have, then that creates space in the tables. And as a result of that, we are able to collect more. So, but at the time,
okay. So which means that the numbers are telling us that this thing is collapsing from what it used to be up to now. Because if it is now 35%, what is happening to the rest of the tires that are not collected? Where do they go? Are they with the... Where are these tires? Because it's almost like selling 65%. Now, previously we were told about 70%. I don't know where it was coming from. But I think it was officially in the annual report about the collection. And I'm asking myself, where was that figure coming from? Because all of us were saying 70% diversion, collection. And what you're telling us is that it was 60-something, it went to 50, now it's sitting at 35.
Yes, sir. When it came from 63% to in 2015 to 55% in 2015 and then to 49% in 2017. In terms of this, it's difficult for us to be able to tell where those tires are. Because if you look at the data, our estimation is that there's about 5,000 dealers around the country and we were only servicing 50%. So the question is, these are the entire dealers that we watch are selling to 2,000 other dealers that were not using. So the focus that we've been currently focusing on is to take over the operation, stabilize, clean processing capacity, so that we are able to clean space at the table, so that we can improve and then from there increase the capacity in terms of collection. That is in terms of collection, many more transporters, also many more table seats to be able to take tires to. And also more processing. Because that is we need to have more processing. Processing is kind of the actual, it's called actual field of the whole processing. Of all the entire processing operation. If you manage processing, everything comes to a standstill as a result of that. So, as you mentioned earlier on, when we took over the operations in October, and they got the food already. Then if we got food, they would it's less positive. And also no exporting of the tires. I mean, if you picture,
Okay, can we finish so that we wrap up? Let's answer the questions and remember we'll make our own conclusions about the information that we are digesting now. So, your name again?
Nolwazi.
Yeah.
I would like to answer the question that Honorable Talitha raised. Basically two questions. One is how many leaders are being serviced? We indicated, Honorable Member, that we are looking at about 3,000 leaders that we're currently servicing. And potentially another 2,000 that should be serviced. And then you had a question around provinces that don't have depots. Which provinces don't have depots? So we have depots in all of the provinces. And the other question was, why are there depots? Why do we have 11 depots that are white? So I'm just going to go through the list of the depots that we have. So we start in Gauteng, Honorable Member. In Gauteng, we have a depot in Blackwood. We have a depot in Midrand. It's our biggest depot. It's 9,500 square meters. We have a depot in, as I list them, let me maybe also go through the ownership. So Blackwood is a depot that is owned by a black-owned. Midrand is black-owned. It's just about 9,500 square meters. We have Western area in the west side of the province. We've got two landlords there. One is black, one is white. And Western area is also quite a big difference. It's the biggest in the province, just over 2,000 square meters. So just over 20,000 square meters, just over 2 acres. Then we have a smaller depot in Pretoria. In Waltu, it's in a small warehouse, it's 1,000 square meters, it is white owned. We then have a depot in Spring. It's our holding depot at the moment, it's full of OTR ties, it is white owned. We have a depot in Tembisa, which is, our landlord is black there. Then we move off from Gauteng, we go to the Free State. We've got two depots in the Free State. We've got one big one, which is 5,000 square meters in Bloemfontein, and then we've got a smaller one. And both are white owned. If we move to the Northern Cape, we have one depot in Bloemfontein. It is white owned. We then go to Northwest, we have one depot in Rustenburg. If we move to Western Cape, we've got two depots. We've got a facility which is just over 2 hectares in Atlantis, and then we've got a smaller depot in Monkovay. If we go to the Eastern Cape, the ownership for the Western Cape ones, they both want. If we move to the Eastern Cape, we've got two depots in the Eastern Cape. We've got one in Markham in PE, just under 5,000 square meters, it is white owned. We have another depot in East London in Berlin, about 4,500 square meters. If we go to the ownership for East London is white. If we then go to Limpopo, we've got one depot. It is owner operated and it's black. Then in Nelspruit, we've got one depot, white owned. We've got two depots in Mpumalanga, one in Nelspruit, white owned. We've got another one in Sparrowbank. Also white owned. And then if we move to KZN, we've got four depots. We've got one in Hammersdale, which is black owned. In fact, it is owned by a company associated with the Processor Market Group, which is right next door to the depot. The second depot is in Cutteridge, the biggest depot in KZN, it is 50,000 square meters. And then we have a smaller depot in the ownership for Cutteridge, which is white. Then we have Richards Bay, which is a smaller depot, it's in a warehouse, it's black owned. Lastly, we've got a depot in Ladysmith, which is black owned. And I think I've covered all the problems. So we have some white owned and some black owned. We have added through the tender that I mentioned earlier that we run, we have added to those depots. All of those depots at the moment are currently in operation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Then I would like to just deal with the question that Honourable Tian Kamp raised to say, you know, is this sustainable? So we've increased payment to the participants, is it sustainable? And also, I think there was a question around the mandate. Has the mandate changed now that we, you know, the Waste Bureau is issuing or is employing people for 5 years and is issuing, you know, tenders for longer periods? So if we look at the land tender that was issued, that was for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that long term is that these properties that the landlords that we're contracting with, they have to invest, they have to lay out certain capital in respect of the depot. So they have to put up fences, they have to stormwater control measures, and that those are not cheap. Fire management, there's a lot that they have to invest in. And it's not really worthwhile for them if the term is short. So that's really the main reason. The same will apply to processes. As Velapi indicated in his presentation, there's a very capital intensive technologies. So you do need, as an investor or as a processor, you need that longer term period in order to be able to commit capital. What about OTR of the road waste tires? So what we've done so far is we resuscitated the project that we had up in Mokalakwena within the Anglo mine that was a downsizing facility for OTRs. We've got some shredding capacity there, and so we got that project back on track, and we, with the shred that we get from that facility, we are supplying the processor in the East Rand, Mandini is the name of the processor, and we are then contracting, or busy now with the tender, we're going to be contracting more capacity to have the woman.
Yeah. Briefly.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Honourable Student Kamp, on your question about Lex Road, indeed, you are correct. Lex Road did not have a fence, but as of yesterday, and I do have picked it, we put on the fence because it was our biggest concern as well. And maybe on the issue of the data that you want for 2018, we do have the data, but because we are using manual systems, we've not been able yet to compute it, but as soon as I'm back in the office, we can do that and send it right through to you. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. The two sets of questions on the market from Honorable Stan Kamp. Okay, just to note that the Bureau recently commissioned a market study, and the idea that I think we must look at this enterprise as a, you know, market on the one end and then supply on the other, because it is a supply-demand picture. But currently, we have a lot of supply, but actually no off-takers on the other side. So there's a suspicion that there's a little market, because remember, it's a crowded market. The products that come out of these processors are available by other competition. I mean, Sasol produces oil, and so does the pyrolysis plant, as a case in point. Carbon Black, and I think it goes to one of the in terms of what goes into tire manufacturing as well. Really, it's carbon black. I think up to 35% of the tire is carbon black. and then there's Rava. Anything up to 65% is Rava, and the rest are just fillers. And those products also come from the oil industry and the carbon black manufacturers. So the processors have to compete in a crowded marketplace. That's why the big challenge in terms of ensuring sustainability of this industry, so that we are able effectively to transform waste into wealth, is to match the demand with supply. And that is going to be a journey for the enterprise. In that we'll have to assist in terms of doing R&D. In fact, pyrolysis plants are almost trying to do what Sasol is doing as a case in point. And that's a problem for them because they can't compete in the market, except we have kind of started conversation with Sasol as an example to bring scale so that our pyrolysis plants can have a captive market. It can help them in terms of refining their product so that it's acceptable to the market. Currently, most of them supply farmers, and that is cheap oil. And the carbon black is also suspect because some of the cement kilns couldn't use it for their kilns because it's really poor quality. So the quality of the product has to be up to what the market requires. And remember, they also state the price. I think it's a real challenge to match, you know, the demand and supply. Currently, we're just pushing tires to the market, but the market doesn't necessarily want the products of the processors. That is a trial and error exercise. And I was saying that pyrolysis is currently demonstration scale. It's not commercial. So the question from Honorable Talisa in terms of the cost of a pyrolysis plant, it's difficult to come up with a number because some are really advanced. Swedish technology that supplies carbon black to Volvo is very much expensive from a small carbon pyrolysis plant that you can buy off the internet. That might be cheaper, but the quality of the product that comes out of that is going to be very different from what you will get from the Swedish technology. It might cost hundreds of millions. So it's a really a range of, I mean, when you're not in the commercial space, you can't come up with a number that says this is the cost of the pyrolysis.
Okay, I think let's leave it there.
Just
do you want to?
Yes. I was going to say, responding to Honorable.
Can you switch off him?
Yes, come to say that you asked the question, what are the plans to fix it? Why not erosion control and other streams and so on? So I think those are the areas where I think the colleagues were talking about reuse. And maybe we should look more into that, something that we can investigate. So all the report says for now is that in trying to keep continuity from the diesel, there are gaps, and those challenges are based on the fact that there was limited investment in the technologies to really and also to process a product that was required by the market. And currently we have pyrolysis technology that gives a small scale contribution to even provision of some of those products. So we still have to go further. That is the challenge here. That's why we were not saying in the report everything is hanging away. It is definitely still a challenge to get processing capacity. And it was the case even during the day. The only thing is whether we should then be asking the minister to continue the exports, which the case against those very exports of tires as they are. If you can export products, but not the tire as it is currently. So that's where the real problem is that you only have capacity for processing, how can you keep it? And lastly, Honorable Chair, we will then come back with the financial information as indicated. Legal opinion, and then and also, yeah, we can confirm that
the people that are complaining about payment, I don't know what is happening with the contract. All of the people that are contracted within the whole trade, from the time the contract was signed, payment has been going through and they've been receiving that payment and such. And the last thing around payment was, I recall, there was also a problem where in Rodisa was paying upfront for the four transporters. And we have changed, and it was therefore operators were given money upfront. We are unfortunately having to account in the system of the Treasury guidelines. We have to pay for what is provided. We can't just pay for and give those upfront payments as they were getting from. So that's where also the unpaying arose from the complaints that I've seen from the register operators previously. As to whether they're heading with the current arrangement, I'm not sure. I think we can find out from the same.
And the case is finished, it's done and dusted. No appeals.
No. That was Chair. It's important.
There's a they've written microphone there on and off.
Yes,
on the side.
The red light's on, but the red light's not on here.
Use the other one. You're always here, but you can't press the button.
I have pressed the button, Chair. I can't ask you about Hong Kong mic.
What are you saying about Parliament? Hong Kong, eh?
Parliament.
You must be careful, eh?
Chair, the case where we are now, they appealed to the... they've been granted an opportunity to appeal. Remember, I think when we reported back to Parliament the last time, we said that the court out of which they appealed only gave them authority to appeal one aspect, and that was the Minister's locus standus. But subsequently, the court now granted them the opportunity to appeal against the entire judgment. And we're still waiting for a date from the Supreme Court of Appeal for that appeal, but it hasn't been finalized yet. So as soon as we get a date, we can let you know.
Right. So if the court said everything is fine, then the case is dismissed. If the court rules in their favor, it might complicate the whole process. It might not.
Yeah, you must remember, Chair, that the period for the initial period, 5-year period for the waste plan. The waste plan as well. So from that perspective, there is no real complication.
So it's academic?
Yeah, it is in a sense.
Okay. Are you sure it's academic?
Well, the plan has been withdrawn, so
okay.
The research can't really operate under the terms of that CASB plan. And the waste bureau has now taken over the function in terms of the act and the regulation.
Okay.
But the complication, I think there is a complication, I'm not a lawyer, Chair, but the fact is that the equipment, all the setup of the equipment have not been either transferred to the Bureau or any other person. So they will then have that and they can decide who they give or whether they continue operating themselves. On the basis of that.
They can't, their plan has been...
No, I'm saying the equipment, remember the things that they invested in. So all of those we cannot, that's why partly, even now, I mean, if you work with some of the depots, actually these are depots, it's not like those, we cannot say that legally we own the operator legally. Because they are under the ownership of the depot.
So
that is a
condition,
just around
assets, but
maybe not major,
okay.
But it is a
complication. Okay. So I guess we might have to be briefed once the legal process has concluded. What's the word for it? Because I remember at some point there was an argument to say the plan that was approved was not time framed, it was supposed to be in perpetuity, something like that. I don't know who was saying that, which was something which was a bit strange. But let's get a full briefing when the court has pronounced the outcome of the Supreme Court. It's a Supreme Court of Appeal. So we will then ask that we get that kind of a briefing. But otherwise, I think let's just conclude it here. and say, I think whilst we do understand that when you take over the system, there are obviously some teething problems with regard to establishment and so forth. But I must say that we are not happy that the collection rate is dropping. From 2016 to now, 2016 from 63% to now estimated to be about 35%. It's a serious cause for concern from our side, because these tires which are not collected, they are going somewhere else. They are causing environmental hazards. Remember, the initial plan was that we are going to start from at a certain point through the introduction of the plan, and then you are going to move progressively up to where you collect all 100% of the tires that are manufactured in the country. You take them through this recycling program, because fundamentally the program is around, it's about addressing environmental concerns. It's not a business model of some sort. You address environmental concerns through the recycling program. So the business of it comes into the recycling part, but the idea is to get these tires off the landfill site. And I think we must never drop that ball. We must never deviate from that that fundamental goal of introduction of this new platform. So whatever we do, that must be the preoccupation that we have. We must keep on increasing. In fact, when we're going to look at the IPPs, we would have expected that there must be an increase in the target. To say we're at this target, now we're moving to this target, and not to experience a decline. I hope that it doesn't go further down. At some point it gets arrested and it goes back to where it used to be. And I'm sure somebody who collects the statistics in the department must explain to us why were we given the percentage of 70% DG. Where did you get this figure? Because it was mentioned. And all of us, when it was mentioned, we really celebrated that, to say we are really moving. In fact, how it came about was that we are one of the few countries where we are having this type of a program, where we are recycling, we are collecting, you see. So it represented progress in as far as we are concerned. So it's an issue that we have to work on, and the Bureau must be fully staffed. There are some vacancies there, I don't know why they are not budgeted, but let all the posts that exist must be filled so that we can have sufficient capacity. Now, as I understand, the idea is not to have the Bureau managing the actual plan. Is to oversee that process. You still have to receive waste, because these things at the end of the day must be driven by entrepreneurship. People must come in, employ their entrepreneurial skills. They must see value in the whole process of recycling waste tires. Instead of being done by the Bureau must oversee the implementation of the plan. So the gentleman at the back was saying there are 4 plans that have been evaluated. So hopefully you will decide, appoint, and then have private sector participation, which is very important in the whole program. So we are then done. The other outstanding issues, I think we will, I'm sure the legal opinion can be available in 2 weeks. The financial issues, we will see if we get them as part of the quarterly, or we can do a standalone briefing. It's very important that we get a sense of the finances, whether we are going to get more or we are going to get less. Now, I've been complaining about the income that gets generated by the plastic. That we are not getting the full benefit of the introduction of the plastic later, because I'm sure the money goes somewhere else into all these other priorities, free education, this and that. And the original idea was to address this waste stream, introduce the levies, get this income from the levies, reinvest it back to address the problem. Now I see now we are moving into the tire stream now. The full value which was collected by Revisa was 600 million. Now we are getting 200 million reinvested back into the system. So meaning the other one, which is about 400, is funding something somewhere. It's not getting back to the program. Now, if we get the finances, we get a sense of what else needs to be done, because although I know there is this concept that you don't reinforce funds, but really it's not the original intention to get money from the tires to fund something else. Because when you introduce this levy must come back, be reinvested back into the system so that you can be able to attend to the system. Okay. Are you okay, Honorable Pedic? Alright. So I think we will just terminate it at this point, and thank you very much, all of you who came to Cape Town. I see the faces. People did not say a word. We normally try and encourage that when you come to Cape Town to come and appear before us, at least you must have an opportunity to say something. You know? To say, at least I was there, this is what I said to the committee. But I guess next time. Alright, so are we ready? Thank you very much, DG. If you want to be excused, you can attend to your other meeting. We are going to proceed now with the source. Okay? Let's try and do it a bit quicker, we don't have time. You're in a hurry to go back. Judy, DDG, and a board member, Nick, Nicholas, welcome, two board members, and the CEO, Mr. Jerry, and CFO, Mr. Sewell, where is the CFO? Oh, at the back, and then Hoshia, my friend, company fellows. you are welcome. I don't know whether there are some more either board members or staff from source, I do not recognize.
No, sir.
All right. So I'm going to hand over, I don't know, to Nick or to Judy, and then introduce the subject, and then let's take us through. Okay. Before that, there was a mistake that happened. The actual letter from myself, there was a problem, because that which was sent to yourself was not the final letter as intended. So Chileka was in a hurry to go home on Friday, and then she sent that one. The other one, I would still want the proper one to be sent, although there is not much difference. The questions are the same, but there is some information which is there on the letter that you received, which is not on the final edited one. So we just send it after this meeting so that you know, for your own records. But the questions are the same. What happened is that we received something through the mail regarding source from some anonymous person who sent us information making some allegation. about governance issues, about management, about this and that. So we thought that because those things were serious allegations, we thought that the proper thing to do is to put them to the board and to the management and to request that you respond to them. So I see there's some responses. They only came today. I've not had an opportunity to go through them. So I guess someone is going to take us through that. DG?
Thank you for that. I was asked by the minister that can I have apology and she said that it will change the program arrangement which I can no longer attend. But she's asked that I just register that she received the letter from the committee and she will not write to commit to the department to the immediate response for fear of misleading public. As she did not get time to investigate the facts. So she is then saying that she thinks that the allegation requires proper investigation, and she is then saying that she suggests that the Department of Sheriff that attending can listen to the explanation about governance and processes, but she still has to have an independent investigation on this. Because she said that we appeal for the allegation that will be appealed. So that is what she was asking to just approach for the committee in the future.
Okay. All right. I think that is noted. Of course, we also received it. We thought that we needed an agent briefing on it. Last week I was not around. We were attending that meeting there on biodiversity, on sustainable use discussion in Brussels. So I asked that we must get an agent briefing on this allegation. So I see something has been prepared, so I'm going to ask Nick to introduce the item. I don't know whether you want to hand over to the CEO or how do you want to handle it as a board.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm quite happy to say a couple of words and then hand over to anybody else that would like to speak. But I agree with the previous comment that I think we need to be given some time to come back to you on specifics. But just to give you a high level, there are two places where they are talking about appointment of two senior people. And I was part of one of those processes. I wasn't part of the other one, which in fact fell under HR, but I was under the finance one. Those particular matters ended in coming to board. And certain of the facts which relate to the allegations were actually reported to board, and there were answers to those particular matters. And the board made the decision after ensuring that the correct process had been undertaken. If eventually it comes out that those processes need to be investigated, so be it. That will happen, and if any further information is needed, we will provide that. I think the other matter that comes up is the radar contract. The radar contract has been a long time in coming, about 8 or 9 years. We need to divide the findings of the radar contract into two particular areas. The one is people are trying to have the whole contract investigated related to the fact that the contract was not correctly constituted. The allegation is not related to that. And we have to be careful of getting off the mark. The allegation that was made relates specifically to a guarantee whereby the provider would not be given that money related to the guarantee until the contract was completed and that any repairs and maintenance related to the installation was eventually completed. The allegation relates to the guarantee and the fact that there was a request for R1 million payment to be made, where in fact the guarantee needed to repay the repairs and maintenance. What we are doing now is we are currently, management on our behalf and on behalf of the committee that has been formed to investigate that particular item. They are employing a professional investigating a firm to investigate those particular allegations specifically and to get a result on that item. The person that was responsible for this investigation resigned from the board, and unfortunately one of the staff members is suspended at the moment. That relates to the mayor. So that is the progress on that. And the last item relates to the factor of the land. Our lease came to a finalisation. We in fact had to find alternative premises. We have gone through that particular process. We were also attempting, we own a piece of land, and we were attempting to develop that land, and we put that into our plan, our 3-year plan and our 1-year plan to make a start on that, and funds weren't available from Treasury to do that, so that has now been shelved until in the future it becomes a viable proposition. So related to the last one and the fact of that there are issues related to the tender, the board has formed a subcommittee to look at any issues which have arisen, and the next step to happen will be a report back to the board from that particular committee. And I'm going to leave it at that. That at a high level relates to the 4 items and the allegations, and there are written responses to them. But I think the most important thing from our point of view is anything that is required by yourselves, we will provide it to you.
Okay, so would you hand over to the CEO? Where is the chair?
The chair sends the apology in the written note. I think that it sends confirming the members of the board who will be in attendance. It was indicated there that the chair was in writing.
The apology was sent to?
It was sent to the chair in confirming who was going to attend from the board and EXCO. So the letter that was sent from and in that letter, the apology.
We don't have apology from the chair of the board.
Chairperson, if I may, in the letter, the very last sentence, we are apologizing on behalf of the chairperson and all the other members of the board who cannot attend. And maybe just to put it on record, you also could not attend. We had to cancel the meeting last week, which is related to SOS because of an agent who was responsibility later. We hope we got an invitation from the committee on Monday. She was still not available to attend another engagement with the SOS due to the responsibility.
But I'm sure you understand that apologies comes in writing. You know, there's something that I don't understand by when the minister is not able to come, every time she writes a formal letter, or the deputy minister, or even the DG, because we expect that they should be part of the meeting. And any other apology must not be a by the way apology. Remember, the chair of the board is the one that we have requested she must at least be able to come to the committee. And of course the CEO. And if the chair is not available, the chair will delegate another member of the board to be part of our meeting. I mean, that is something that we explained even when we started. That's the reason why we're insisting that the chair at least must be here. If the chair is not available, delegate another member of the board, the deputy chair. If the deputy chair is not available, another member of the board. Now, we get a some by the way apology. Towards the end of the letter, then you get the chair will not be able to attend due to prior commitment. I mean, I don't know how many times must we emphasize this thing, and I think you see, if it is the chair will make us she's really pushing us, because now we're going to come across as people who are inconsiderate, while it's actually her who's putting us in this situation. I don't think she really respects this committee, and I don't even know why she's still in that office, given our recommendations in the past, because she clearly doesn't respect Parliament. You know, can choose to come, choose not to come, no letter sent. I'm sure she's got a PA, she's got someone who assists her administrative, who can send a letter to say, we apologize, I won't be able to come, and all that. So we are noting this content that she's giving us, because clearly there is no any other way of explaining it, treating us badly as Parliament, and we are not going to continue to complain. So I hope you will send a message, you will also send a letter to express our disgust at how she's treating us without even apologizing for her. CEO, you can take us through the responses. Of course, we take note of what the minister says. She might want to follow up on other things, but let's get the official responses to the question. For the allegations.
Thank you very much.
I don't know what you are going to say. There's somewhere where you are also thrown into the mix. So I don't know. You speak for yourself. I thought that the chair would be here to say, because most of the things here have to do with the board than management. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. There were two documents that we then received. I think the first one was the email, where we've been able to establish at least the identity of the person is not real. While the email address is real, we don't have a staff member of that name in our complaint. So that's one of the investigations that the institute is where that came from. The first responses, I think, are to the original email, as was received by yourself.
What will be the purpose of the investigation? To get to the identity?
Yes, and the source of the email.
I thought you were treating this thing as somebody who's a whistleblower. That's what you said in the letter, that we received this one from the whistleblower, and when you treat information that comes from the whistleblower, you don't have to pursue the identity of the person. It's to deal with the issues that have been raised, because clearly the person wants to remain anonymous. That's why the person might be using other names that are not the actual names.
And that is correct. Here's the challenge. The issues, people, etc., that are mentioned in here are real. The nuancing of those issues is not. And so if you are to address, let's say, I'll call them administrative issues, for example, about access to information that is presented to the board, you would want, at least in my position, you would want to be able to engage a visible party in order to address those issues. But an invisible party becomes difficult to address when in fact there are issues about administration, there are issues about process and systems that are mentioned. So the names are real, the issues are real, the projects that are mentioned are real. It's the nuancing, and I think as we go through some of the responses, you'll see the angle from which we come. And I'm told that, of course, I'm new, but I'm told not so new anymore, 9 months in the job, and I'm told that this has been a modus operandi of some parties in the Weather Service to do precisely this, of raising issues which are organizational, of raising them outside of other fora and using the same kind of email address. And it seems this name is not the first time that this has been used. So it would also be helpful.
One will get comments from the members, how do we address this kind? You are right, it deals with the people, and sometimes if the information becomes, it's later discovered that it's not, it's wrong information, and now you have cast suspicion on the integrity of the people, so how do you deal with that situation? But you also have to balance it against anonymity. You know, the law also protects whistleblowers. So we'll hear from members. I'm sure we can also get some advice as to how do we treat this kind of situation. But our interest to whether the issues raised are correct or not correct. That's where we're coming from. Whether it's raised by a person who can come here or a person who prefers to be anonymous, our interest is to deal with the issue. So maybe we might just take us through the response to the response.
So Chairperson, I will be guided by you as to whether we should commence with the letter that you addressed to the minister, because that was a paraphrase in the email as well, or deal with the email directly and then go to your to the letter you addressed.
Either way, let's just be considerate of time.
Okay.
I thought that you can just respond to the issues. I didn't know that you also have the email. I thought the email is only with us. If you also receive the details, it's fine. You can speak to what the crux of the allegation is without necessarily going line by line.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the response.
No, thank you very much, Chair.
But the email, did you get it from us?
No, it was forwarded by the chairperson of the board, I think, who made a
okay.
copy, who was copied in the
Oh, she was copied as well.
She was copied.
Okay.
So as Mr. Nico has already alluded, there are really a few issues. The first is around the appointment, HR-related matter, the appointment of our current executive for corporate and regulatory matters, Ms. Mpapu. The first issue is that, in essence, says the appointment process did not follow our recruitment policy. And here we'd like to state that the SOAR does have a recruitment policy, and that recruitment policy, there was one existing pre-2017, and that policy has since been revised in 2017. And this specifies all the steps that need to be taken in a recruitment and placement process for any staff member hired by the company. These include where there is no job that exists, a job evaluation. Include advertising, interviews, psychometric assessments, and of course the placement at the end of that process. We can confirm to the committee that this process, the recruitment process, was followed in the recruitment of Ms. Mpapu. The second issue, Chair, that is raised is in relation to her emolument. And we can here say that when she arrived in the organization, she commenced duty in December of 2016, she did raise the issue that her package, total cost to company, was below the earnings that she had at her previous employer, and informed the Saudi inviter of that matter. The improved offer on her initial offer was approved by the then interim CEO, Ms. Mapula Khan, in January 2017. The total figure, and that amount was 200,000. The email, of course, alleges a higher amount of 400,000, but we can confirm that in addition to this adjustment, there was an inflationary adjustment which was detected for all staff, as was approved by the board, and this was around May time frame. And so there is nothing untoward in our view in the information that we have as to why her salary was adjusted. Her probationary period ended in
You know what, I'm trying to read here, my apologies, members and yourself. I'm trying to read here, and in the meantime you're also continuing to just to summarize. And I thought there are two issues here. The issues about employment when there was a outstanding. I didn't hear you mentioning that.
Yes.
The previous one.
Okay.
Because when I read, there's some information that you did not speak to. And the second one is this one of the salary. You see, the thing is that we got this information now, we could have read it before, but I understand that it was something that we requested on an agent basis only on Friday, so we couldn't get it beforehand. So that one is fine, but if you can summarize it in such a way that we're able to follow you, even though you are reading through it.
I'll try my best. With respect, let me go back to the first one where I said this recruitment process was followed in the case of Ms. Mpafuli. One of the requirements in our recruitment process is that all information is disclosed. We are satisfied that in the process of the interview, as Mr. Nick Nichols indicated, all the information that was pertinent to a previous employer was disclosed to the board, including a disclosure agreement, which was made with the previous employer. And that those processes with the previous employer were concluded in June of 2016. She was employed by the Weather Service in December of 2016.
So there was no longer a case.
To be answered.
So that was disclosed, that there was.
It was disclosed to the board, and that information was made available in writing.
Okay, the second one. You are reading this document.
Yes, I was just working on the original email, and so where we've gone and made responses, that's the responses that I'm addressing, which may address one or more bullet points that were raised in the original email. So instead of reading the email and then crafting a response on each of those bullet points, where bullet points were similar, unfortunately, again, they're not numbered, so.
So the entire paragraph is yours on this one.
which
says the recruitment process was followed.
Yes, so the lettering in italics and bold is the sole response. So where we have bold and in italics, that's the Weather Service response. That is in the original email. It doesn't have a title. This is a source of it. It starts, "We are concerned. We are the concerned employee."
Also, the source one is in bold.
In bold and in italics. That's the source response. And in some cases, we just lump the response to the two paragraphs or bullet points that are pertinent to that issue. So we've not gone bullet by bullet and responded to.
Okay, let's proceed. I'll raise my concern at the end, because if that is the case, that there's a whole lot of allegations, and the response is that just one line, the recruitment process was followed in the appointment of Ms. Jane Hopwood.
Yes.
So that is the source response.
That's correct. And we outlined what the policy says. So there is a recruitment policy being made available to the policy. That process, there are steps to be followed in there, and that's what we have outlined and confirmed.
Okay.
That those processes were followed.
I don't know. Was it that there was no time, you were given not sufficient time to respond, or is this what you are satisfied with? Because I would have thought that the response could be detailed, as their position is also detailed. To say Ms. Mpafudi was recruited on this day, and this is what happened. There was a disclosure about the previous with regards that which was she was charged with before as not being serious. Because they are saying here, this thing was serious, was of a serious nature, the disciplinary inquiry. It was also described as such by the former employer. So remember, you are making a judgment call. When somebody says, I went through the disciplinary inquiry, I was not found guilty or was found guilty, you will make an assessment to see whether this thing was serious or wasn't serious, is in relation to what this person is going to do there. Because it's all about judgment at the end of the day. So that's why I thought, although the allegation is serious, the response is a one-liner. You understand? I don't know whether you're with me.
I'm with you, Chair. And this is where the difficulty was in respect of this email, as I said, the anonymity thereof, because there was a board process of recruitment. The process was followed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I cannot go back into that process and say what the board's view was at that time of recruitment. Because that's where the
Yeah, at least you can give us the information about that process.
Yes,
there was
which is precisely what I'm doing. I was saying there was a recruitment process, it was advertised, and our recruitment process requires that information is made available to the board or to the partner. And the position relative to her previous employer, that information, even though that process had been concluded, was made available to the board in writing.
But that which you are saying is not in your report.
In the second part of the document that in the response to your letter, that's the disclosure that we addressed. That there was an agreement between her and her previous employer, which was disclosed to the source and its partner.
Is it here?
In the second document?
Or in the second, on the recruitment policy?
Yes. So in the letter that you addressed to the chairperson of the board, to the minister, in response to points 1 and 2, we indicate that, one, the board is involved in the appointment process of executives at the Weber Service. The policy was followed in the appointment of Ms. Mpafudi. So here, we just don't go into the detail about there was a recruitment process that was advertised. Normally when we advertise, we then have a panel that's constituted by the board and executive, at the end of that, the panel does the interviews, the interviews, etc. It is where that we say that, as we say, the job was advertised, she was interviewed by a panel constituted by board members, including the CEO, all pertinent information relative to Ms. Mpafudi's previous employer was disclosed to the panel, including a non-disclosure agreement between her and SAPCO as per the requirements of the recruitment policy.
Where are you reading?
So I'm reading the letter that you addressed to the minister,
mm-hmm.
in which you outlined, paraphrased basically, the email.
Mm-hmm.
And in this is now the one that I'm reading. That's what I was trying to clarify. That in the first instance, we responded to the email that we
received. But why do you? Why is that information?
Again, that information is as per in italics and in bold, and it's inserted in the letter that you addressed to the minister, and I think that copy has been made available.
Judy, you want to assist?
So there are two documents. The chair of the board received, was CC'd on the email, Then we also received a letter from yourself. And Chair, you indicated that there was in fact a revised letter from yourself with some small edits. However, we were working on the letter that was received. We have then responded, or the response is outlined partly in the email in bold and in italics, and partly in the letter in bold and italics. Because there was a slightly different areas of emphasis. So we started on the email, and then we received the chair's letter. The letter we received on Friday afternoon, I think, I think, Chair, it's also, given the fact that it has been quite a tight time frame, what the effort in responding has been to be as thorough as we can within the constraints of the time that we have. And I think that the Minister and the Board have really requested time to be allowed to just go into more detail where that further detail is necessary. And I think it's useful for the Chair to be indicating to us where that detail may be necessary. So I think maybe what is slightly confusing is that there are these two base documents. So there's the original email and we insert, and the comments have been inserted, or the responses have been inserted in bold and italics, and then there's the letter from Chair, and the responses have been inserted in bold and italics. And we can consolidate that into one single response.
It might help, because now it's confusing.
Mm.
There was information, the CEO was referring to a recruitment process where the CEO was present and she disclosed information and stuff like that. And I didn't see it here. Now I see it on this other letter.
Yeah.
Mm.
And even on this other letter, it's very summarized. Just brief. So I don't know what members think. Must we still proceed, or should we give them more time to give us something more comprehensive? Because the way it is now, we will rely on your verbal edition, which is something that will not be here. Let me explain to you what my difficulty is. There is this email which makes detailed allegations saying somebody was shortlisted, was not on the original shortlist, was then included later. This person was interviewed, the performance was substandard, and all of those allegations. Very serious allegations about recruitment. And then when the response comes, you simply say The recruitment process was followed in the appointment of a said person. It doesn't say much. What do you say about this allegation that that person was not on the original shortlist, was included? Is it true? Is it not true? You see, you are not rebutting the allegation by giving facts. You are making statements that say what this allegation is not true. From your information, it may be like that, but remember, we don't have the same information that you have. We will rely on whatever information that the board gives to us to say. This proves that everything else was followed to the latter. I don't know whether you understand my point. Because I'm very frustrated where I am now. I'm very frustrated by summarized responses to detailed allegations. Because how do you rebut the allegations? You become detailed, you provide proof. can I just get from members before I make a ruling? Because I can tell you where I am now. I'm really frustrated about just this first response. The first response to the allegation will prompt a lot of follow-up questions which are not necessary if you can provide all the details without us having to probe and dig for more information. Let me just get from the numbers and then I will give you an opportunity. Do you want to say something, Honorable Chairman? Maybe I'm being unfair here, and I really wish I am not, but maybe I'm unfair. The members will tell if everything we have there, we can proceed with it.
Thank you. I'd like to make a proposal. I would like some more meat on the spot, but I'd like to propose that we get the response and then maybe we could get a detailed report or something, but so that we can start investigating. Because what I'm also worried about, worried about, is that words in this in the whistleblower's letter. Such as, you know, apparently a rumor making around. It's not first-hand stuff. So it's stuff that's been heard. So I think, to be fair, we need to act. We need a more meaty report. But I would like to know, you know, just basics of what's going on and what's happening. It seems that they will do that. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chair. My point of view, Chair, is that there are a lot of irregularities that I see here. And I'm very much disappointed because the board members are not here. And all these allegations are evolving higher. So I think I would advise that if we can just give them a chance and wait for the board member so that they can come before us and give us the answers to the allegation.
Okay. You wanted to say something before?
Thanks, Chair. I was just wanting, I think, to seek a little bit of a bit more guidance on this, because to some extent, in the case of this first item, and it's useful to use this particular first point, it's not clear what additional information would need to be made available, because in this case, it was a panel that was constituted, so we would be able to, it was a panel that was constituted, so we would be able to
give the portfolio committee the date that the panel was constituted, and when the interview took place. We could disclose that level of information, but I think the fact that the process is guided by a policy, and that policy is made available, and the report back to the board can be made available. It would have been reflected in the minutes. The minutes are available. So I think just to get a little bit more clarity on the kind of information that you would be seeking, because from our perspective, we pretty much on this particular item provided what we can provide, other than going into that level of deep detail.
Okay. Let me just, because we're dealing with the first part, without going to the next one, let me just read the allegations here. which Ms. Julia Mpafuri, or employment of a Ms. Julia Mpafuri under controversial circumstances. Ms. Mpafuri was employed as a general manager, human capital management, a division that has since been reconfigured as corporate and regulatory affairs. Now comes the allegation. The board was involved in the recruitment of Ms. Mpafuri. We were told on authority that some of the board members insisted that Ms. Mpafuri be included in the shortlist of the candidates for this job, specifically by Mr. David Mfuso, I guess he's a board member. She was duly included in the shortlist and interviewed. She became one of the two candidates who were recommended for psychometric testing. We are told on authority that Ms. Mpafuri's results of a psychometric test were very poor, and established that she required much development. On the other hand, the board ignored a highly qualified candidate, ignored the results of a psychometric test, and forced ahead in appointing her in the context that other candidates were linked to Dr. Mapuleni. There are a number of allegations that appear here, that the issue of a psychometric test, for instance. Now, the first one is that the allegation is that she was not on the original list, she was included on the original list. The second allegation is that she was referred to psychometric testing, the two of them, and the results were poor of the psychometric test. But ultimately she was appointed. The other candidate had more qualifications than her. Those are the basic allegations which are there. So I would expect that when you respond, you say the recruitment policy was followed, she was on the original shortlist, the issue of psychometric testing, she was part of the people recommended for psychometric testing, the results which came from the psychometric testing was favorable or was recommending her, or whatever the results were. But talk to the issue that is part of the allegation. Don't just ignore it. Talk to it in detail, disprove it. You can even give us the results of the psychometric test to confirm that what these people are saying here is not true. Honorable Pedder?
There is this allegation you left out, because the last sentence says, Mpafuri. Mpafuri entrenched as a sole employee, is starting to be bold to engage in less than honest activities. That's less than honest activities. I mean, that's a serious thing.
Yeah, but I hope you understand the point I'm making. response to the allegations in full, so that we are then satisfied that there is nothing into this thing. It's just somebody who's disgruntled, who does not have the right information, who really just want to cause trouble. Because if you are going to give us one-liners like this one, our initial, you know, impression would be, but it looks like there's something being hidden here. Why are we not given the full? If somebody is employed, goes through the process, there are records to that effect of the interview, of the advertisement of the position, of the shortlisting panel, people who were shortlisted, and the names they shortlisted, of the interview, the results of the interview, the result of the psychometric test, if there was such a psychometric test. All that information can be made available to us. If you really want to disprove an allegation that you think is not true. So this is what we are looking for, because you asked what information do you want. So I will suggest that let's adjourn. Okay?
No, no, thanks, Chair. And I think just to say that it was not easy to get that level of detail over a weekend period. So it was...
No, that's why I understand. That's why I'm saying you should have just came with that disclaimer to say, look, we give you what we have now. Because of the time frame that we're given, we're not able to get more information. That I will understand. But if you say this constitutes everything in terms of your response, then that's why I've got a problem. So let's agree. Honorable Steele Kamp would have preferred that we go through all of them, but I'm not sure whether, because we still have to come back to all these issues. You know, we still have to come back to them. I think let's get a bit more detail, and then we come back again next week.
We're here on the 20th, so we can give us another shot on the 20th.
But we can do the same thing.
Yeah.
I can do the same thing. Okay. We will reschedule and then allow the source to give us more information. Our request is that please just give the information in full. Because the minute it's like you're holding back something, we get worried. Because we are not in the space, we don't know what's happening. When we get the allegations, we take them serious. Because we want that entity to be governed properly, we want it to be managed properly. So please, we must put us at ease that there is nothing untoward in this allegation. And the only way for you to do that is when you give us the information, when you go, you become detailed in your response, give us the attachment. Make all these allegations laughable if they have to be laughable, if they are not true. But the minute you move from an assumption that we are like believing them, then you end up being defensive. And if really there is nothing into it, there is no need to be defensive. Give us the information and that the committee will be satisfied with the responses. So we will then meet again next Tuesday. Next Tuesday we will then meet again, and I'm sure you would have received sufficient time, and the chair will be here as well, and the minister would have also probably gotten time to follow up on some of the issues here. But we are meeting again next Tuesday. Next Tuesday are supposed to be the APP. We can move them to Thursday. We will revise the program and then move them to Thursday or so. CEO?
In looking at the chair, you might recall that we had actually requested that we be moved forward from the 2 days after the holiday to the 20th. It's World Water Day on the 22nd, and the minister is there. There's an engagement in the northwest on that day. And given the current water situation in the country, that is important to reinforce. And on the 23rd, it's World Met Day, also, which is an internationally celebrated day. World
What's happening?
On the 23rd, it's World Meteorological Day, which is
Wednesday.
No,
Friday.
What is
the Wednesday?
Friday the 23rd. So next week Wednesday is a public holiday.
Yeah.
And the 22nd is World Water Day. And there are a series of events, I think, which the minister is attending, and the weather service, and also the 20th.
So you are scheduled to come on Tuesday?
We were scheduled to come on Tuesday.
Yeah, so that's the date we are making.
Yes, so we can provide the additional information.
Okay. I thought you were asking for us to revise the date.
No, I thought I had you revise it to Thursday.
No, Tuesday.
Tuesday. 20th, we will be here.
Yeah, Tuesday we will then deal with this issue, and then if there's something else also, yeah, the Marley Special Planning Bill is 10 minutes, and then we can also schedule something else on the Tuesday.
As well as the APT.
Yeah, I can do the APT as well. Yeah. Okay, so this is how we... This is how we come to the end of our meeting. Thank you very much, honorable members. Tomorrow we are processing the carbon tax bill. There is a joint meeting with the finance committee. So it's going to be for the whole day tomorrow. Start at 10. Up to 4 o'clock. There is a number of institutions who are going to be presenting on the carbon tax bill. So members will be are invited to come to that. So thank you. Nick. Nick, thank you very much. Thank you, Judy. I hope now you understand where we are at, so that you are able to prepare properly for us when we meet next week. We will get much more detailed information than this one, but we are not going to feel bad about this. We are not going to blame you that much about this information because we gave you late. Even though, you know, when you deal with us, the best thing is to give us as much information as possible. And you would have done your job. We would be very happy because we can make our own conclusion. So we'll meet again next Tuesday. Thank you very much for us. Nothing has been arranged for lunch or something. We've got a sitting in the afternoon. Thank you. So Mr. Trail, I don't know when it has been approved, but we can move up to 3 o'clock. Yeah, but what's his name? Eunice. Eunice has arranged a program for the whole thing. I think I'll talk to him to say when the president is in the house, which all of us must be there. Yeah, yeah, no, thanks.
When I wasn't actually here, when you